Hello and welcome to the Selfish Podcast. Today's guest, Nate Red, or Nate R-E-D, he's going to shine a light on his experiences, his life, his journey. And I think you're going to be fascinated, inspired, and motivated. So first, Nate, can you just let the guests in and me, myself, as whereabouts in the world are you and what time of day is it for you?
Well, right now I'm in Houston, Texas, you know, and it's 10 o'clock. A.M. over here.
Okay. Yeah, nice.
Because Central Standard Time.
It's always nice to know where people are in this time where we can connect around the world so quickly. Like I'm in Europe and it's 5 o'clock in the evening for me, but we're connected in an instant. So it's such a beautiful time to share and connect, and big reason why I created this podcast. And we actually met, for people that don't know, through Spotify Green Room. And if you don't know what that is, you can create a profile and go on there and have a live interaction. And I've been going on there just to connect with people from all different places in a live format. And that's where I met Nate in a group. I heard a lot about his story, his life, had a lot of similarities in our experiences in certain ways that I can't wait for him to share. But it was his passion and what I would call zest for life that was inspiring and powerful, and I think offers so much to the listeners. So Nate, if you're ready, can you just paint me and the guests a picture of what was life like pre 10 years old? Where did you grow up and how was life?
Life at 10 years old was, you know, it was a pretty interesting life at 10. You know, I grew up regularly, you know, me with my single dad, you know, my single father at 10 years old. You know, I went to a nice school at 10. You know, my dad was teaching me how to be responsible at 10, you know, and that's one thing I do respect about my dad, you know, and it's a blessing to have that because very few people are able to have that. So, you know, at 10, I went to school, was learning about finance too, you know, how to keep some money in my pocket, you know.
Yeah.
How
was life pre 10 years old? What was life like before then?
Yeah, like life before 10 was you know, it was the same thing, you know, I would say age 1 through 3 was when I was with my mom, and you know, that was a pretty tough experience, only because, you know, my mom was still trying to get on her feet, and it was rough, you know. She did have problems with alcohol, so I had to you know, go to my dad had to call Child Protective Service to knock down the door to get me to be a single father, you know. So that's one thing that I do think is important, you know, for a child to have. But, you know, with me, I was just blessed to be able to even have that happen, you know, because, yeah, you know, especially when I seen my mom just she was in a hamper with a whole bunch of beer cans, like, pulled to her. I was in shock when I seen it, you know, especially when you're that age, like age 2, 3, and you just see that and you're like, you know, what's going on, you know?
Yeah, because especially like you said, the parental figures, they're our first real connection in life. So when that's not in a balance, it can be really impactful on the child. So it's amazing that you're even able to speak about it now. And that's why I was so excited to get you on the podcast, because I think that's a big process in itself, to be able to speak about events that have happened in our life that have really touched us.
Right.
But before we get into too much detail in that area, like, so what did you want to be when you was a child? Did you have any ambitions or desires, like when you was a little child, that you're like, I want this for my life, or I want to do this or be this?
For me, it all was music, you know. It started with music. Everything did. When I was 3, you know, I would watch music videos and stuff. And, you know, I don't think it was intentional, because I wasn't supposed to, but you know, it was what was on. So when I sing in music, it was like, yeah, I had a pretty good feeling of what I wanted to do.
Yes, you're just driven towards that.
I was very driven.
Yeah, and what was school like for you?
School was pretty cool. You know, in elementary school, I would move different schools. And then middle school started to be a little bit more easier with school because it was a consistent thing because I was with my dad. So it was much more of a consistent financial structure to the school. So I was able to stay at a school for a longer period of time. So
you got a lot more structure in your life once your dad was able to give you them roots and be there for you in that support.
Right. So you know, I went to school, the same school, you know, consistently up until freshman year, you know, and then I moved my sophomore year to another school.
What age would you be at then? Because in the UK, we don't use freshman or we use different terms. So what age is that? Is that like 16 to 18?
Yeah, like for middle school, it would be age 13 to 15. And then in high school, it would be age 15 to age 18. And then elementary school would be age 6 through 12.
I think. Okay, yeah. So, yeah, it's the same. We just have different words. But the same ages basically. So I was just interested to check on that. So how was the life? How was that transition like with how you felt with what was happening in your home life and what had happened to being in an area with other people, say that, you know, did you talk about it? Did you hide it? How did you deal with it in that time with your child? What did you use? I know you said it's probably going to be music, but what did you use during that time to find yourself some balance?
I mean, for me, I wasn't psychologically, you know, using anything very young or early on. But later on in life, I did try to, you know, I did get into some pretty bad and tough things. Like I would say music came, but it wasn't just music that came. It was like it came with all the other stuff too, like drugs and all kind of like weed pretty much and everything like that. So
yeah, what type of music was you into?
I was interested in hip-hop and R&B, but I was also listening to my kind of music from my generation. So it was like, I would listen to older music and I would listen to the music that came in my generation. So, you know, hip hop, R&B, and, you know, trap music didn't come till 2015, but like hip hop music, you know.
Yeah, and there's a high influence, like you say, between the modern cultures of hip hop compared to the older music, the R&B, back to the soul, right, and the gospel music. You know, it's like you're not going to get the gospel singers that are listening, that are taking drugs and promoting drugs. Yet right, there's some attractive beats and sounds and ways of expressing yourself through hip hop. But there is. I've always liked hip hop since I was a young child. Like, I think it's a very nice expression, you know, like you get to hear people's real passions, and that was always important to me when I was young. So I saw like the art form of hip-hop, but then I also saw lots of my friends who didn't look at it the same way, but they were influenced much more by the drugs and the culture rather than the art. They like just didn't care about the art form, but once they got involved in it, they become like corrupted with drugs and power, you know, and went quite far down that route and they no longer cared about making the music or putting their words to music. They'll listen to the music and go and sell some drugs.
Exactly. You know, and me, I didn't sell it, But I was one of the people who did buy it, you know, when it came to weed and stuff like that. And, you know, it was just me being a regular high school, middle school kid in my phase. But, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, because when I got into music and stuff and was making music, it wasn't always that. You know, I made it off the strength of just freestyling. You know, I used to freestyle with my dad in the car, you know, age three. Nice. You know, I would do that. And it was just one of those things where I didn't even know you can record music. I thought you just freestyle. Everybody knew how to freestyle.
That's just how music's made.
Yeah, like, I'm just like, everybody knows how to freestyle. And that I didn't have no clue about audio or none of that, you know. So it's one of those things where writing, I did write poetry, but it was a separate thing. I wrote and then I freestyled. And when I freestyled, I didn't record my freestyles. It was just like, I'm thinking this is how everybody do things with the music. My dad was like, nah, you know, you can record. You didn't know that? That's how music is made. I was like, nah, I didn't, you know? And it was interesting to me, man. It really was.
Yeah, so that sparked a passion with you, like that you can make the sounds and actually record it down and just build that structure. So did you find, like, so would you say your earliest struggle in life was witnessing the alcohol abuse in your mother's life, and would you say that music do you express that with music? Is it, do you intertwine them, your younger years, to the actual music you put out now? How do you work with it?
I mean, my message is always going to be where my reasoning hits, right, for making music, you know. And I used to want people to, you know, it was for, okay, I want the fame or whatever, you know. As a young kid, that's what you want to do when you're in the music, you know. But then my reason turned to money when I became a teenager. And then as I got even older than that, you know, at my age now, 22, I do it because it's therapy. You know, I use my music therapeutically and, you know, just for me, you know, as though, you know, the reason it is, even without eyes, even if people weren't to watch or to listen or to even pay for it, I still would be doing it because my reasoning now is a much more solid foundational reason, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, that really makes sense to me. And like I said, I see a lot of people that even much later in life than 22 are still in, like, either trying to get the money or the fame. And you can see the dissatisfaction, and they're not enjoying their passion anymore. They'll be making music, which they've loved at one point, and now it's become something they almost hate because it's not giving them the fame or the money that they want. And you can see it, just it's something you love and you've lost it. It's like when you see someone who loves their girlfriend and treats them bad.
You know, it's completely like that. And that's why I tell people, man, for me, I wasn't quick to make music a career or a job. And, you know, that's the reason why, you know, because I turned down a lot of record deals, too. I turned them down because that was not what I did it for. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Turned down Def Jam a couple times. You know what I mean? Cause that's just not, I do not want to be in the industry. You know, that's just was never me, you know.
Yeah.
I looked up to the people that were in it, but it was just not something I seen myself doing. You know what I'm saying? I still want to enjoy life, you know, and go out there and just be able to go outside without paparazzi flashing or go outside without people being like, hey, are you that guy that, you know, and all that other stuff, you know?
So, like, and just enjoy the actual process and what you, and the creation that you're making.
Exactly. So
How's your relationship now with your mother and father? Now it's years later. Is there any change?
I got a good relationship with him. Actually, I talked to my dad earlier yesterday, and I talked to my mom yesterday as well. You know, I have a good relationship with both parents. You know, my mom, she's doing well. You know, she's doing good. My dad, he's doing fine. You know, and actually later on today, my mom's probably going to come over. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, nice.
Because I remembered from when we spoke in Green Room, but the listeners obviously weren't there to hear it. But I remember you talking about that, and you're saying you're going to actually ring your mom and stuff that day. And I could tell from the way you was talking about her and the experience that you'd gone through a stage, and you didn't have any blame, regret, or any negativity towards the experiences that you had that were unpleasant due to your mom's own personal issues. And that really resonated with me, because my mom had severe mental illness, schizophrenia, through my whole childhood and her whole life. She actually passed about a month ago, but she had that for her whole life, and it caused me to suffer a lot of poverty, a lot of extreme experiences that are very bizarre that most people would never see or deal with. And in my younger years, that caused me a lot of pain. That caused me a lot of suffering to have seen it, to have held it. And a lot of regret, and just, you know, but I never felt angry or bitter towards my mother for it. I never blamed her. And then later in life, I was actually telling her that I appreciate them experiences. They made me who I am, you know, and I appreciate her, and I appreciate even the worst experience that I went through with her. I appreciate it now. And I could see you resonate with that.
Right. I really do. And, you know, one thing I would say, Luke, is, man, rest in peace, you know, with your mom and everything, you know, because that's always a hard thing, you know, especially on the son. And, you know, I got a lot of brothers and cousins, you know, that have their moms pass away, that were my aunts, and my godmother passed away too, you know. So it's like, it's one of those things where I can see it in that way, because, you know, my mom really did the best she could, and she did a great job, you know. When my parents had me, they were still trying to figure it out themselves. You see what I'm saying? Like, my dad was still trying to figure it out himself, you know. He had moved from San Antonio back to Houston when he found out the news, you know, and he was just trying to fight for me to see me. And, you know, my mom was on heavy alcohol. My dad just stopped alcohol. Like, as soon as he was able to get, you know, custody of me, like, he already was a year or 2 years sober. You see what I'm saying? Good.
Yeah.
So it was like, oh.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think, like, especially when you're younger, it's really hard to imagine that your parents aren't everything and don't know everything, and they're living their own life process and experiences, and they're not always going to have the perfect answers or do the perfect thing. But you can normally see, if you look hard enough, that they're trying out of love and care, but they're going to make mistakes that are going to make something not work. But they're humans as well. They're humans, and it's like, it's whether you can witness that, you can see their intention. So I love when you said, like, your mom was doing the best she can, and you was able to see that.
Yeah, you know, she did the best she could, and she did a great job. You know, she taught me some things too. You know, my dad taught me structure, but my mom also taught me, you know, you got to get what you need done before you get what you want done. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, and that's a good lesson.
You know, she said, and she also taught me how to enjoy my work as well. When I'm done with working or done doing the hard work, man, enjoy your time to yourself. You see what I'm saying? And sometimes she'll tell me, hey, don't be stuck in the house. Go out there, you know? And that's one thing that taught me a lot. When my mom was able to get me out the house and able to do that, that was really cool, because You know, sometimes I need that fresh air. Sometimes I need to go out there and get some stuff going, you know?
Yeah, and actually be in life, not trapped exactly. in a box.
You know, yeah, my dad taught me structure inside the house. My mom taught me structure outside the house.
Oh, nice, man. So you get that balance.
Exactly. You know, yeah. And she was nurturing when, you know, whenever she could be, you know, and because she was a working mother as well. She worked a heavy full-time job, so she wasn't, you know, the type to be there every day. You know, yeah. she was working, so she would have a little note. Hey, I'm gonna be home late. Make sure that you and your brother are, you know, eating your dinner the way you're supposed to, taking your shower, having a little note for us, and we were grateful for that, you know.
Yeah, no, nice. And did you find, like, for me as well, witnessing my mom losing, say, her conscious control, so you would have witnessed something similar when your mom's had some alcohol, did you find that changed your own sort of life in terms of how you deal with not just alcohol but any form of substance that can alter your state? Did you find yourself more interested in that area to, like, avoid it or to take it, or how did that affect your own life with substances?
I mean, with me, I was just like, I thought that it, when I first seen it, when I seen my mom in that hamper, I thought that the alcohol was like some type of poisoning or something. Mm. I didn't know what it was. I was young, very yeah. young. So I'm not looking at the alcohol. I'm looking at my mom. You see what I'm saying? I didn't even know what that was. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And as I got older, I started to finally get it, what that was. You know, later on in life, I was able to experience things with alcohol and things with that type of thing. And I was just like, okay, I get where my mom, why my mom was where she was. She was intoxicated. You know what I'm yeah. saying? And did
that make you want to stay away from it yourself?
Nah, I mean, I still had the experience. You see what I'm saying? I still had the high school experience. You know, it just was one of those things where I was too young to understand it then. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, I was too young to understand that whole entire aspect of it. You know, and it came from stress. You know, I had experienced that stress myself. So me just experiencing that myself, I knew what it was. You see what I'm saying? I started to be able to know what it was.
Yeah, you know? You can gain that appreciation for where she was and what was actually happening.
Exactly. You know, and
how do you think if you was to meet your younger self, let's say around 10 years old now, what do you think your younger self would say about you now?
I mean, probably I came a long way. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, because my younger me was still trying to figure it out, was still new to everything, you know, and didn't know too much about life. So probably would say that I came a long way.
Nice. Yeah, that's good. Now, like, the last 2 years has been a very different 2 years for everybody. With what's going on around the world, and like I said, different states in America, I know you have different regulations, and same as in Europe, we have different rules, different regulations, but everyone's had to have some impact on their life. How would you say the last 2 years has impacted your life, both like internally as well as your external life? What's happened in your world for the last 2 years?
The last 2 years, man, has been crazy. For me, 2020, I cut off all communication, really. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I was able to kind of put things in perspective, you know, because I turned my phone off for like 6 months to a year one time. No communication, no contact at all, you know. And the reason why was because I was in a pretty terrible spot, you know. When it came to that, You know,
so if you don't mind, so what was happening in that point? That what was so terrible at that point?
You know, my college classes had closed down because of the COVID, and I was trying to figure out where to go for work, you know, and my car, my first car that I had, you know, because I still had the same red car from high school. And it got crashed, man. It was a 2004 Malibu. And I was just like, man, I need some type of transportation for work. And so I was just at home. And that, you know, I was really broken down for a minute. And I had to sit and collect my thoughts. So I turned off my phone. You know, I had to escape my phone. I really did. And so I did that. And I was able to kind of just like, I got to get organized. I got to get right back to where I was before. Like, I didn't have the drive, so I had to look deeper within, like, what was I doing in high school to have the drive entrepreneur-wise? You know what I mean? I got to get organized. So I started journaling. I started to organize my place more and more. And eventually I started becoming able to find a consistency about myself, right?
Yeah, nice.
Able to go outside and just live life, man. Go to the park, you know, go catch me a cup of coffee, right? And stuff like that. So I was able to do that 2020. That was late 2020. And I had eventually got me a new job, and I eventually was able to get me a new car. You know, I was on my second car in 2020, and then I was on my third car 2021. So, <Yeah. laughs> you know, and I was able to get things in perspective. So that was what it was with me, was living my life, man. I really had to. Especially during the EMS thing, too. I had an EMX experience when I first got back to work because I wasn't used to my schedule, right?
Can you explain what did you say? An EMS?
Yeah, EMS. It was emergency people to come and get you, kind of like an ambulance.
Okay.
And so they came on this while I was at work. I went into NeuroShock. And for those who don't know what neuroplastic shock is, it's pretty much like, you know, it's overstress or an overcharge in your neuro system, which is where your brain is. And, you know, you go through a stress and, you know, your blood pressure rises up. And that's what happened with me, right?
Back then, yeah, this is early 2021?
This was like 2021, early 2021, like to the beginning of 2020. I mean, no, to the end of 2020, right?
Yeah.
And so I was at, whenever I got work and I was able to get a consistent schedule, right? I wasn't used to sleep. I wasn't used to a consistent schedule of sleeping, my consistent work schedule. I wasn't used to it, right? My body wasn't used to it because it was overworking itself before then. And I went into a neuro shock through stress. And when they told me my high blood pressure was 175, they were like, you're 21. You're too young to be having this right here. But they were like, we got to do an MRI scan, right? And they did that to see what was going on. And they told me that it was overstress. I wasn't sleeping enough. I wasn't hydrating enough. And I wasn't, you know, pretty much just taking care of things that needed to be taken care of while I was on my schedule, right? Yeah. Because I was so used to, before I had a consistent schedule, I was so used to working, staying up late, getting stuff done. But it was out, my mind was everywhere. I was thinking 30 things to 35 things all at once. And so I was just fast pacing before I had a real schedule. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna have to take this serious, you know, because I'm 21 and I'm having high blood pressure. I have to get my electrolytes up for one, and I gotta get serious about my sleep, right? Mm-hmm. So I was able to do that. And you know, I carry a consistent schedule with me even now. So that changed.
So now it's been like a year since that. So you've been working on that for a full year. How's your sleep now?
Oh, it's good. You know,
you feel different inside. You can feel the more balance.
Yeah, you know, I'm moved. So I have a whole new schedule now. But I'm able to balance my schedule through journaling, you know, and having my days, you know, where I work, my days that I'm off, my days that I get off, my days that I sleep. I'm able to plan it all. So that's pretty cool, you know.
So if someone else listening is still going through that stress of this time and stuff, you would recommend journaling for them?
Yeah, you know, I recommend that. I recommend building a schedule, having a consistent schedule, because that helps, you know. It helps you with organizing your day, and it helps you without, you know, with the uncertainty. So you don't have to worry, you know, and so you're not discombobulated. It really helps with that. You know,
I think especially helps, like you were saying, because it resonates with me when you were saying about like thinking so many things at once. And I think that happens when you're highly ambitious and you like you can have so many things going. Sometimes just writing them down enables you to take time to not have them flying around in your mind because you've put it to paper.
Right.
And like you said, it starts to accumulate and you just start to get things done a little bit smoother, a little bit quicker. I did go for a point myself where I was writing too much down, I felt. You know, I started writing so many things. I was writing down everything that I wanted to do and think, and I was just like, then it's impossible to like actually meet your own quota that you've created. I created a schedule that was so intense that then I would start to look back and be like, oh, I didn't manage to get like so many bits done. And then I had to go through a process of like, do you know what, this is all part of the plan of like making a realistic quota for yourself, a realistic schedule.
Exactly. You know, and man, you hit it right on the nail. You know, is really just you have so many ideas. And for me, that was what used to stress me out a lot. I had 20,000 ideas that I would cram a day into my mind. No journal. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I would have maybe 200 thoughts and I wouldn't write them down. I wouldn't have a journal. Instead, I would keep trying to remember all of them the next day. and then I would pile more ideas and thoughts on to those ideas and thoughts from yesterday. And you know, that's not healthy. So I had to journal it, man. So that way I'm not thinking about it all day. You know, I could always come back to it. If ever I forget, I got it written down, you know?
Yeah. And you're saying, so you're making music for your passion. Do you put that online for people to listen to, or is it something you keep to yourself?
I mean, I really keep a lot of new stuff to myself, but I still got all of my some of my uploads that I have, you know, on SoundCloud. I still got that up there. I still got uploads on Spotify, you know. Like my first album that I did during the quarantine, I got that up there. It's called The Story of My Life, really.
Okay, nice. And you created that at the start of lockdown?
Yeah. I created that one the start of lockdown. And, you know, I distributed it with my team. over at level. So, you know, that's pretty cool.
And what name do people search? Is it nate.e.d to find you?
It's r.e.d of y.a.e. You know.
Okay. I'll put it in the description so people can come and listen to what you got to say, and I'm going to check it out myself and have a little listen. But I think music has a power. I heard a quote the other day. Someone said, I don't know who said it, but they said, like, life can hit hard, but music will always soften the blow.
Oh, yeah. You know, and for me, like you asked, is music just a little thing you do personally? Yeah, you know, it's kind of both, but it's really just now it's personal, you know, because, you know, I'm starting to see where I really want to, why I want to do this, right? And, yeah, I want to make what I do a lifestyle, you know, and have it in my life and correlate it with my life. And, you know, I'm not quick to turn my passion into a job or a career. You know, it's like I'm not trying to hate it or trying to make this a chore. You know, I want to still enjoy it, you know, and be able to have that time to escape when I do it, you know.
Yeah, no, I can definitely resonate with that. You see a lot of people that do, like, say, go down that path, and you can end up being quite it can be quite painful, you know, because it's something you love so much, but it's become a demand.
Exactly. You know, especially when people try to expect of you in your own creative field, like, you make music, but now people are trying to be the judge of when you should create, when you should make your own. It's like, you're like, okay, I don't even want to do it anymore at that point. Yeah. Like you're like, man, I'm ready for me to get out of contract. If ever you were to be in contract, which I'm glad I didn't take it. You know, cause I was able to kind of build my own little label within that. So,
yeah, because, like, the people can get contracted down, and it's exciting because it's like a step towards making it sort of some sort of official process. But there's always a demands and criteria and quotas and things you've got to meet within that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, for me, I'm glad I got my own little brand, my own little label, so I don't have to worry about that. You know, I don't have to drop at a certain time. I could drop at any time. I can make however I want to make or create what I want to create. I just haven't uploaded in so long because that's not what I'm doing with the music right now. You know what I mean? And one thing about me is that, you know, whenever I upload, I always try to make sure I don't promote it until, you know, maybe outside with my friends, like, organically and authentically, but I keep it very small and minimal, you know?
And do you also, I know you're saying, I think in the green room, it's talking about you do art as well. Is it you do some form of art form as well, like painting or drawing or?
Yeah, you know, in college, I used to do canvas paintings. I used to do paintings with my regular green, yellow, and red paint. I used to do certain colorways, you know, just color canvases. I used to do it in high school, you know.
Is that something you still do, and what does that give you?
I mean, I still paint, you know. Right now, I'm on oil pastels right now. So, what kind of relief it gives me? It gives me a good relief, you know.
You find that like a different type of creative outlet than the music? Do you find it similar?
Yeah, it's all art, you know. It's all a type of art. It's kind of like culinary art, kind of how like cooking is with certain people. Yeah. It's kind of like how MMA, martial arts, and all that, you know, with boxing, that how that is for other people, you know.
It's all a form of expression as well. Like you say, art, how you can express yourself.
Exactly, you know, and it's all expressing yourself. You know, I think that's one thing I would can call art is an escape, you know, and it really does help, you know, because, you know, I'm a writer too, you know, I do writing, you know, I do it with poetry and, you know, I'm an all around creative, you know, so it's like I like to write poetry, write music. I like to make music. I like to produce it. I like to paint whenever I got time to paint. I like to do poetry. You know, it's all kinds of stuff I like in within the art field, you know?
Yeah. No, and I think definitely is this, like I say, certain people, it's a bit like sport as well. Like you mentioned boxing and things. I found when I was younger, it was actually boxing that really helped me in my early teens from getting out of a lot of the pain and stress I had in my life. And just having that, being able to physically express myself really helped. Just being able to move. And someone I had on the last podcast, she was just talking about dancing. And during her, she also had, her father was an alcoholic, and she had a lot of mixed messages because of this when she was a child. But she found if she was dancing at that time, it really helped her just move in her body, you know, and it's something she kept doing like all the time, even if it's at home, and just found the movement can do it. And like you said, some people find that through putting pen to paper, paint to paper, or singing or music. But I feel if someone's really struggling and they're really in a bad place, they need to look at how are they expressing themselves in some form of creativity. Can they paint? Even it doesn't have to be good, but can they spend a moment to put pen to paper, to write something, to journal, to draw, you know, or to move their body, to dance, to box? Exactly. Like if you're not doing something, I think we naturally want to create. So if you're not doing anything, you're going to feel discomfort.
Exactly. Because it's one of those things, you know, I tell people all the time, try to find a hobby, you know, because it really does help. You know what I mean? And I tell people, I have anxiety, so it helps with that, you know, and it helps me so that, because I can really get depressed on if I'm not doing anything or if I'm not productive with my time or my day, it can really affect me in such a way. So, you know, I try to stay busy as much as I can, you know?
See, I had that issue when I was your age. I had a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression. But especially if I wasn't being like super productive, whatever that was. But I come to realize that I had such a weight on my shoulders of my own expectations of what I should be doing, how I should be doing. But I was living in the future. A lot of the time when the discomfort was there, later I could witness that that discomfort was my own dictator, internal dictator, that was putting pressure on me. Like, you know, they say like you can have someone whipping you from behind to do something, or you can have someone lead you with a carrot. I was like whipping myself from behind. I was punishing myself to get the job done with such demand, such structure and importance, that if anything messed that up or it slowed down, it could put me into a really deep depression or anxiety. And sometimes things in life can be taken out of our control, as everyone's witnessed in the last 2 years. Sometimes the outside world is going to make your schedule mess up. It's going to make something not go to plan. And that can make you feel really depressed and really things. But for me, it came from letting go of them expectations and really enjoying the journey of just when I'm doing it, I'm doing it. If I can't do it, I can't do it. It's just not happening, but I'm not going to let that mess me up. I'll get back on it when I get back on it.
Exactly. See, and that's why when I told you about me having to slow down and be take my health serious and keep a consistent schedule, it didn't really, like, you know, I wasn't overworking myself. You know, I don't overwork myself. But when I say stay busy, I mean, stay busy as in, you know, go out there and live my life, you know, go out there and just, you know, have a day that, you know, I would be content with, you know. It don't always have to be work, but if I could go out there and maybe do some scooter rides, you know, probably get on a scooter, get on a bicycle, get on something, do something, you know, I tell people it don't always got to be work, but it do have to be something that's therapeutic, like music, you know, creativity. I don't think I'm overworking myself when I do those things, you know, because I know it's very good for, you know, my mentality, you know, and putting things back to a foundation.
Yeah. Do you have any other places like people can find you? I know you have an Instagram account. Is that something you share publicly? Is it other?
Yeah, you know, I got an Instagram. It's RedTSK36K. That's my handle for every social media platform. Twitter, Facebook, and you could also catch me on Snapchat, DJ Francisa, but you probably have that in my LinkedIn, you know, or my the link in my bios if you follow me on my socials. But I got the same handle, you know, pretty much everywhere.
Okay, I'll make sure to put that in description as well so people can follow you on there. Is there one particular that you use? I'm just personally interested. Do you find one particular social media platform your sort of favorite place to go and use? Or do you distribute your time fairly evenly between them all?
I mean, I do it evenly. I mean, at one point in time, I was doing it to where I was consistent with social media. But, man, I'm going to be honest with you, man. I've been living my life so long to where it's like I use it for, you know, my poetry, my writing, or whatever things that I'm doing within the media, but I'm not on there consistently. But yeah, you know, whenever I get a chance to connect with people, I'm able to connect with them there. You know, I always check my DMs on there. And every other social media site. So, you know, if you do want to hit me up, I definitely get to your DM on there, you know, no doubt about that. You know,
yeah, no, because I was interested just because, like, as I've been going through my process and wanting to connect and share with as many people as possible, like, I was like, right, I went through most of my life never having any involvement on like any social media. Like, I signed up Facebook first time this year, and I would avoid it at all costs. And then when I wanted to share and connect with people, I was like, right, now I've got to have every single one. And then I started like a crazy schedule of how I'm allocating myself time on each one, how much quota I've got to meet each day. You know, it became really stressful quite quickly. And I was, you know, like, I need to cut back. I need to choose which ones I enjoy. I need to share where I enjoy sharing. And I'm still finding my way on there, which ones I exactly. like, which ones I don't, which ones seem to have more benefit for which causes.
Right.
But yeah.
I mean, I use it for what it's intended for. You know what I mean? Like, I use social media very sparingly, you know. I come to it and then I'll hop back off and go and get back to what I got to do. And then I'll come back to it whenever I can. You know, it's one of those things, you know, like I'm off today. So we're able to discuss. But, you know, whenever I have free time, I'll come to it very sparingly, you know.
Yeah, I think it's good to have a balance with these things. Like, it's very easy for a lot of people I see are heavily addicted to it, where it's not, they're not using it to serve them. It's, you know, it's actually it's causing a lot of pressure in their life.
Exactly. Instead, you're serving the media. Yeah. I mean, a lot of people do have it like that, you know, where they have their whole entire life on it. And, you know, it could really be damaging that way. I tried to do it that way and I was like, nah, man, this ain't for me. You know, because one thing about me is that I had social media before I restarted in 2020, right? Mm. I had a social media platform and then, you know, my account got deleted. You know, when I was in college and high school. And so I stepped away from the phone. So when I got back on the phone, in 2020, right? Because I always take, for some reason, I take these huge breaks with my media and my phone. I do that all the time just to try to reinvent myself and get back into the groove and just do what I got to do.
Yeah.
So I come back. I came back to the media a second time in 2021. And that was because, you know, I have the thing happen where I was trying to get stuff together.
Yeah, and it sounded like it worked for you when you first tried it. So I can see why that would be a pattern that you're going to want to, you know, keep implementing, because it was successful for you.
Exactly. Like, I did it in college. In college, I was really authentically promoting my stuff, like my canvas paintings. I would wear certain clothes that I already created and designed. You know, I did podcasting in high school, but in college, it was like, okay, I'm doing this art and I'm going all the way with it. And I was making music and all this other stuff, but I wasn't promoting on the media. Everything was authentic. People knew about it in an authentic way because I seen everybody every day, but because it was college. But then 2020 killed that. So I was like, all right, now I got to connect with them. And, you know, I connected with a lot of college students I went to school with through social media, because we all was going through the same thing in quarantine. And man, I would be uploading my skits, my acting, all that daily on there. And, you know, my Facebook page probably could vouch for that. I still got a lot of those things up there, quarantine videos. And, man, you probably have a blast looking at them. They're pretty hilarious.
I will go through and have a little check later.
Yeah. It's funny, but you know, I did that, and then I had to get off of it because it was one of those things where, because I already came into social media as an authentic person, so I had to get off of it because I was like, what's going on? Why am I making my art solely this now? You know?
Yeah, and, like, just taking time recalibrating.
Exactly, you know, and I turned it off, and I went back into reality again, and it. You know, one thing about me is I'm a realist, man. I look at things for what it is, man. Like, the media is for entertainment, and whatever you're trying to watch and whatever you're trying to post and upload, it's supposed to come from organic experiences. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
and or your business. You know, if you're a model, an actor, or whatever, you know, it helps you connect with your clients or whatever. You know, I look at it like that, you know, a networking place of network. So one thing about me is I started to look and see that my life, a little bit of my life was being poured into it. And it was like, no, I can't do that. You know?
Oh, nice, man.
So I stepped back and exhaled, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a lesson a lot of people can learn from you, from that. Like, if they're struggling, maybe just step back, take a breath. And they might be a bit scared of the idea of 6 months off a phone, but try a day if you can't. You know, some of these people, yeah. I think a day would be a long time. Just take a day off.
Yeah.
Just see what it's like to just turn it off in the morning or the night before. And, you know, just don't turn it on for 24 hours. If you have someone really important in your life, you can message them and say, do you know, my phone's off tomorrow. I'm not dead. It's okay.
and trust me, time really goes by fast when you do start to implement it in your life, because when you do that, notice how you know you can enjoy yourself without the phone. You know what I mean? You really can. Like me, I can go out here and live life, talk to people, hey, how's it going, how's your day been, you know? And I can do that because I have some conversational skills about me already. So you know, I can do that without the phone being something where I'm bored and let me go on my phone. I never really have that now because I was able to implement just going out there and living my life. So it's much more easier on the clock, and it's much more easier when I'm talking to people too, and also social events. It's much more easier to enjoy the moment, you know.
Yeah, and there's nothing worse sometimes than enjoying the moment with someone in the real presence, communicating, and like someone's then looking at their phone instantly because the first little bleep gone off and they're completely distracted. You know, if it's
exactly.
If someone walked over to them and just started talking in their face, they'd say, "Oh, sorry, I'm just in a conversation at the moment. I will right. one moment." But when it's the phone, it's like everything's out the window. It's like the phone takes priority.
Exactly. You know, and I'm glad I work with other people because we're on the clock, so I'm able to talk to them, you know, and carry out a good conversation with them because we're on the clock, you know, and that also helps you too. When you're on the clock, go on to all these other places where other people are on the clock, you can talk to them and they'll be able to have these conversations with you that are real and organic, and you don't have to have your phone for them. You know, because they're working, you're working.
So yeah, you guys are kind of a real conversation.
Exactly. You know, and, you know, one thing about it is that I think that's what's cool about the structure of my work is that I can't use my phone while I'm working.
Yeah, good.
So, you know, that helps a lot, too, on that as well. And I never really been the type. My mom till this day is like, "Why do you even have a phone, son? you rarely use it. What's going on with you?"
You know, yeah, see, because I'm a bit older than you. So when I grew up, phones came sort of when I was a teenager is when phones started to turn up. But you could only text and phone call, and like for the most part, once you get a phone when you're a teenager, you end up just leaving it places because you don't care about it so much. It's something new, and the only person that's ever going to ring you is your parents and say like, "Where are you? Get home." So you end up like not having it. And then like as times change and you get screens and games and videos, but I see the younger generations, they've had that from sitting in the pram. They've got a video in front of their face, a colorful game. And it's like they're being raised on it.
Exactly. You know? Like, I mean, we're not Generation A. They're going to be super into the technology, but I'm Generation Z. Right, but I'm like the late Generation Z. I'm not the early generation.
But what does that make me if I'm 34 now? What generation? What letter am I?
You're Generation Y.
Why? So I'm always questioning, is it?
Yeah, because there's Generation X, Y, Z, and the new one is A.
And the new one's A, starting again from scratch.
Yeah, so it's like you're Generation Y.
Okay.
Yeah, you're the generation before our generation, you know, like the 1990s, maybe 19. You're 1980s, right?
Yeah, 80s. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, you're Generation Y. Yeah. Like.
Hey, man. I remember it's just coming up to an hour, so I just got to tell you, I really appreciate your time and everything you've had to say. It's been beautiful to hear your story and everything. But before we go, I have a few short, fun questions that I ask every guest at the end of the show. Have you got time for them?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? So I'm going to get in straight into the question. Choose one, a cat or a dog?
I would choose a dog.
Yeah. And what's your favorite color?
White. Well, that's my favorite color is red, but white is my favorite shade.
Okay. And what excites you? What gives you energy?
I would say just going out there and, you know, what gives me energy is just living life, man. Like, that's what gives me energy, just being able to go out and breathe, you know.
Okay, and what would you say turns you off?
I mean, the thing that turns me off really is just like, you know, hard-headedness, you know, not being open-minded to other people's experiences. Uh-huh. That's what really turns me off the most, you know.
Okay, what sound or noise do you love?
The sound of noise that I love will probably be wind. I like the sound of wind.
No, I've had quite a few people that like or love the sound of wind. But what sound of noise do you hate?
Sound of noise that I hate? I would say squeaky noise.
Squeaky noise. What first comes to mind when I say, what's your greatest fear?
My greatest fear would be not accomplishing my goals or accomplishing, you know, certain goals before my time is up.
Okay. What do you love about yourself?
Man, I love the fact that I'm able to create, you know. I like my creative mind.
Oh, nice. And what do you love in others?
And I love the individuality of others. You know, I like when people are different from me and from everybody else.
Oh, nice. And last question, what do you love about animals?
What I like about animals are they don't really necessarily abide by certain laws that we abide by. You know what I mean? They're in the wild. They enjoy life the way they're intended to enjoy life. I think we can learn some things from animals, really.
Yeah, I really like that answer. And I like to, like, when I look at the birds and you see, like, you hear stories of birds that migrate from country to country, and it's like no one's puts a restriction or a law and said, no, this is your boundary. This is you can't go here because you're a pelican, you know, you're not allowed here.
Right.
You know, so. But man, it's been amazing to hear your life and some of your story. I know only an hour is a short time to go into depths of someone's experience, but I really loved you being open, honest, and authentic. So thank you so much.
Appreciate you, Luke, man. Until next time.
Yeah, let's keep in touch and we'll catch up sometime in the future.
Oh, for sure. You know, I got you on Green Room, so, you know, we're going to keep it going.
Yeah, and Green Room's something I pop on, I try and use that app really sort of like you were saying, sparingly. I just, if I feel inspired after I've done my morning routine and I want to connect to someone around there in the world, I just jump on.
Yeah, you know, it's very sparingly that you use these things. But man, we're going to catch up, man. And I'm glad that I was able to talk to you. Thank you for having me as your guest.
Hey, man, I loved it. So thank you. And have a great rest of your day. It's evening for me, so I'm going to go take my dog and cats for a walk and make something to eat. So enjoy. You've got the whole day ahead of you.
Stay up, stay safe, stay blessed. All right, man.
You too, man. Much blessings and love to you. Thank you so much for being here and listening to The Selfish Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Greenheart, and I appreciate you being here. Don't forget to check out my YouTube channel. Just search Luke Greenheart on YouTube. You'll find me. Check out my website, lukegreenheart.com. Have an amazing day and stay tuned for more episodes. I'll be interviewing guests on their path of self-development, their path to self, getting to know them in much more intimacy, much more depth, sharing and connecting with all so we can have a much more blissful, joyful, and productive life together. All right, much love. Have a great day.